Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Murray Barlow from Rustenburg Winery. How are you, Murray?
Good to be back.
Okay, last week we were talking a little bit about South Africa and touched on Stellenbosch, but I really want to focus in on your winery and some of the wines you guys produce.
Great.
Okay, so let's touch on your Chardonnays. The two I tried were both barrel fermented with Malolactic, etc. You had two Stellenbosch Chardonnay and then your Five Soldiers Chardonnay?
That's correct. So we have two Chardonnays. We like to wild ferment our Chardonnays. It just gives us a lot of lovely complexing factors, not adding commercial yeast to the wines. They ferment in barrel and they stay in barrel for an extended period of time. The difference between the two is the Stellenbosch is about 70% estate fruit and about 30% fruit bought in from the region. And that spends a year in oak, about 20% of the oak is new. And then we have the Five Soldiers, which is an old block. It's a single vineyard wine, only about 6,000 bottles produced every year. And what's interesting about this wine is the majority of the oak we use here is bent with steam when the barrels are being produced, not with fire.
Yeah, because normally you get your barrel half made and then you heat it up over something to toast the inside and heat it up so you can bend it.
That's right. So you would sort of get almost what they call a flour that you would get with all the staves, and then you would use fire to slowly bend the staves in, and you'd put the hoops on to make the shape of the barrel, and then yep. At a second stage you will do the toasting. So by using steam or by using hot water to bend the oak, it means that you can have a much more precise toasting later on. Rather than relying on or seeing the impact of the toasting when you're actually bending the wood and not looking for the
oh, so the barrels still get toasted even though they've been bent.
They still get toasted, but it's much more precise.
How do they bend it with steam? Because I've been to a barrel maker and I've seen how they put a little burner underneath it and they put the barrels on top.
Yep.
How do they? Is it like a steam?
It's almost like a cauldron. So they put this flour. If you can imagine the bottom two hoops of the barrel with all these staves
sticking out,
that then is dipped into a cauldron and steam is pumped in, or warm water is pumped in, depending on the wood. And from there, the wood becomes pliable like it would if you heated it with fire.
Oh, okay.
And from there, you'll get the wood to be bent. And this is actually from a cooperage in Beaujolais. There's only one cooperage in Beaujolais. So if you want to know who I'm talking about, just Google
Cooperage
in Beaujolais. But they are really iconic coopers. They supply most of Burgundy, a huge amount of the American trade, and we use them extensively for Chardonnay production.
The other white wine I tried earlier was Roussanne.
That's correct, yes.
And I actually quite like Roussanne and Marsanne. I know they're different grape varieties, but to me, structurally, they're slightly different. You often have a similar nose between Roussanne and Marsanne.
Sure. I mean, Roussanne is an interesting varietal. We really didn't have many white Rhone varietals planted in South Africa until the late 90s. So part of the replanting, we mentioned last week about dealing with virus and bringing in new plant material. So part of the renaissance of Rustenburg was my father in 1997 imported about 300,000 virus-free vines from France. He brought improved plant material of the varieties we already had, but also brought new Rhone varietals. So we were the very first people to plant Roussanne, and we made the first varietal Roussanne in South Africa in 2004. So it's a really interesting grape. I think it makes very savory wines, structured wines. They're not very fruity. They're more perfumed, and you really need to give them bottle age. So like the great Rhone wines of the world, they really do well with bottle age, and they're food wines. They're not something to drink on their own.
I was going to say, because when I tasted it, it tasted quite, for a white wine, quite tannin. For a red wine, very low tannins, but for a white wine,
sure,
there was quite a noticeable grip. And normally you only see that with wines that have been in oak barrels where they've picked up a little bit of tannin from
there. Sure. So white wine tannins essentially are called phenolics. Yep. And if you press the skins very hard on different grape varieties, you will extract these white wine tannins, these phenolics. They tend to give a very rough character in the mouth.
Yep.
And Roussanne is a varietal that has a lot of phenolics. So we tend to whole bunch press the fruit. So instead of crushing and destemming the berries before pressing, we actually just put the whole clusters into the press.
Does that mean you've got a hand harvest?
Everything is hand harvested. So Stellenbosch is unique in that about 80% of our fruit is hand harvested.
Oh, really?
So the rest of the country where you've got sort of bigger productions, you tend to find a lot more machine harvesting.
Yeah.
But we still, at Rustenburg, we're 100%.
Is labor cheap?
Well, I think cheap is the wrong word. I think relatively labor is inexpensive compared to the rest of the world. We have seen a large increase over the last few years in terms of our minimum wage going up. And we are due next year to see a very big increase, probably about 35% of the minimum wage going up. But, you know, it's still, with the new minimum wage, it's probably going to result in the equivalent of someone being paid £12 a day. At minimum wage.
Oh, okay.
It's so it's still cheap. relatively inexpensive. Yeah. And the problem is we have a huge unemployment problem. So we have about a 25% unemployment problem, or unemployment rate, and then youth unemployment is a big problem. So similar to sort of places like Spain and Greece, we have a very similar situation.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, so you don't mind hand harvesting, which means that you can do a whole bunch of pressing with your roost hand, which
That's
helps
correct.
Minimize some of those phenolics.
Yes.
Another sort of Rhone varietal, or almost Rhone varietal, is Grenache. And we were talking earlier about Grenache, because Grenache isn't a classic Stellenbosch grape variety, but it is a grape variety that should do very well in South Africa.
It does. We're seeing more and more Grenache being planted. We planted a little vineyard in 2001. It was the vineyard that everyone cursed at. And I had worked in Australia, or when I studied in Australia, I worked with a number of wineries that had planted Grenache, new Grenache vines. And Grenache loves to give you a huge amount of fruit, so the trick is to tame the amount of fruit that it gives you as a young vine, and then to work the fruit very rapidly in the winery because it ferments very quickly. So I love the varietal. I think the only downfall of it is it can produce very high alcohol wines.
Yeah.
But beyond that, they're lovely and soft and fruity, that lovely red fruit spectrum you get from them, and they're low in tannin generally, so very drinkable wines. But if you can maintain the alcohol balance, they're super.
When you pick Grenache, because we've been talking about phenolic ripeness versus sugar acidity ripeness, we were saying yesterday when I was tasting the wines that if you pick too early, you often get a green peppery type of smell.
Yeah, you can get, you know, if you pick Grenache a little earlier, you're not going to get those red fruits. That more comes from more ripeness. So red fruits, sort of cherry, strawberry characters, come from a bit more ripeness. If you pick earlier, you're going to get much more neutral, more peppery styles, more slightly more acidic wines. And those can be very helpful. So what some people will do is they'll maybe pick a portion early, make a small batch of wine, and then they'll pick the rest ripe and blend the two together at another point. So there are lots of different things you can do. Some people whole bunch ferment their Grenache. You get a little bit of carbonic maceration almost in the berries, or a little bit of lovely sort of perfume coming from it. So a huge number of different methods of producing Grenache.
Okay. The other one that I wanted to touch on is well, you've got two wines. There was the straw wine I mentioned.
Right.
And our straw wine is something you often see in Italy. They call it Pesetto because Italy doesn't have a lot of molds and mildews, botrytis, so they can't make sweet wines, botrytis sweet wines, typically. So they tend to, you know, Amarone or Rosetto, that sort of thing. So tell me about your straw wines.
Straw wine's interesting. We use three different grape varieties for the straw wine. We use Chenin Blanc, which gives us a lovely honeyed raisin character when we've dried the grapes. We use Viognier, which gives you the same characters it would in a dry wine, so apricot and peach. And we use a varietal, which is a very rare varietal, called Crucian Blanc. It's originally a French varietal. It's almost extinct in France. It's almost extinct in South Africa. But it's a very thick skin variety with a lot of great acidity and great for making straw wine.
Where did it come from originally? In France?
From France. So
where in France?
I think it's a southern French varietal. Okay. So it's Crucian Blanc. That's C-R-O-U-C-H-E-N. So Brown Brothers in Australia produce a Crucian Blanc. So they do everything. So if anyone wants to taste it, I've seen it in the UK market. So it's generally quite neutral grape. It was originally sold to the farmers of the Cape as Riesling. It's not Riesling. It's not near Riesling, but very light and acidic and fresh, and unfortunately been rapidly pulled out. But we're actually one of the few people who've planted Crucian Blanc in the last few years. So what we do with the straw wine is we want to raisin the grapes. We don't want any rot. We don't want any botrytis. We want clean raisins. So we start by picking the grapes at the same ripeness we would to make table wine. We then raisin them and pretty much double the sugar content. So obviously while you're raisining, you're maintaining your you're basically losing water, so your sugar content goes up. So we start at about 22% sugar, and we end at about 40% sugar. From there, we then crush the raisins, press the raisins off, and we get very, very low yields. And we ferment this in this sort of syrup in tank.
Yep.
And at about 10.5 degrees alcohol, you've got an incredibly toxic environment for the yeast.
I was going to say, you get up to 10% alcohol. That's
we get to 10%
good.
Alcohol, yeah. So you fermented half the sugar away at that point.
Yep.
And, you know, there are a couple of things that are toxic to yeast. So one of them is alcohol, which is a byproduct, and then sugar as well. And the two of those combined have a huge... put a lot of stress on the cell walls of yeast, and they just end up dying. So it's kind of, it creates its own death in a sense. Yeah. And so that's the point that we stop the fermentation. We tend to bottle the wines quite young, and then the magic happens with bottle age.
Okay, and how long have you seen really old straw wines that you guys have created?
We've seen, I mean, looking at the ones from 2001, they move from almost a lovely golden color right through to almost turning black and syrupy.
They get
very, very concentrated, and the characters change from being fruity, sort of yellow pear and apricot and peach, through to being like toffee-like characters. So really a lovely, lovely sweet wines. They're lower in alcohol. We tend to also have higher acid levels as well. So they're fresh.
Cruchon
Blanc, yeah. Cruchon Blanc. And Chenin Blanc also has great acid levels.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
the acidity is important because it just makes the wines finish nice and fresh and not too cloying.
You need acidity.
Yeah.
It's probably, I always think the most important thing of sweet wine is the acidity.
No doubt, yeah. Definitely. It just gives the wines a bit of freshness and drinkability. Otherwise, it's you can drink a thimbleful and you're done. So.
Yeah, exactly. It's like builder's cup of tea.
Yeah, exactly.
20 tablespoons of sugar. And the other one we tried yesterday was Moscato.
The Muscadel.
Yeah, Muscadel.
Sorry. That's right. Moscato. So it's a red Muscadel. It's the first vintage that we've made red Muscadel. And red Muscadel is essentially a variant of Muscat Frontenan. So over time, if you leave vines in the open, you will get variants that come about. So
mutations.
It's not the right word, really, I suppose, because it makes it sound like it's an alien or a zombie or something like that. But it is exactly a mutation. And so you get this red skin color in Muscadel. And what we do is we macerate the skins. We crush the grapes. We leave them juice on skins for 3 days, and that gives the wine a beautiful red color.
It's almost rosé, though. It wasn't really red. It was more of a...
It's sort of almost rosé, a little bit deeper than rosé.
For a three-day maceration, you'd expect that. For a red grape, you'd expect it to be red.
Sure.
But it is...
It's more of a pink grape, really, I suppose. So you wouldn't get too much color. And then from there, we fortify the juice. So there's no fermentation that happens. We add a neutral grape spirit.
No fermentation at all?
No fermentation. So it's really what people call a Mistel style of fortification.
What's it called? Mistel?
Mistel.
I've never heard of that.
So it's really by fortifying juice rather than fortifying a wine that is already fermenting. So we're adding a neutral grape spirit.
Yeah,
it's about 96% alcohol to the juice. We take the alcohol to 15%, and at that point, there's nothing that can live in that wine. So you've got a huge amount of sugar, a huge amount of alcohol. We then add a little bit of not neutral grape spirit. We add a little bit of brandy spirit.
Yeah.
So it's unaged brandy spirit, hasn't aged in cask, to top the alcohol up to 16.5%, and then from there we age the wine in cask for 3 months.
Okay, it's interesting because most people, even if they're going to do a sweet wine like that and they're going to fortify it, they normally do at least 1 or 2% fermentation first. One of the primary reasons I've always thought was because the flavors you get in the final wine is dependent on the alcoholic fermentation. Yeast is not only converts sugar into alcohol; it changes the flavonoids from being non-aromatic to aromatic, and that's how you know. Because you eat grapes, you don't eat a Pinot Noir; it doesn't taste of strawberries.
Sure,
but the process of alcoholic fermentation changes the flavors, so the strawberry becomes expressed.
Sure, it's very right. So you've got a lot of flavor compounds in grapes are glycosidic, so they think of glucose. They're bound to sugar molecules, and then yeast will unlock these flavors. The thing about Muscat varieties is they already have that character in them. In the juice, in the flavor, in the berries, that musky character. And so we're not looking to unlock anything like or get any more complexing factors from the juice. It's already a very flavorful.
Yeah.
And that's the Muscat for you. So it's one of the oldest grape varieties in the world and one of the most expressive. So yes, it's true. Most people would do a little bit of fermentation, but we're actually happy just to fortify the juice without fermentation. You get a lot of those lovely primary fruit characters. And some of the great wines of South Africa have been fortified wines over the years. They're just very out of fashion.
Yeah.
And
South Africa was a fortified wine producing country, really.
Oh, massive, massive amount. Brandy and fortified wine. So
Colombard's still a big white grape variety.
It is.
A huge use for brandy.
That's right. Brandy, neutral dry white wines. But yeah, so we're very proud of the Red Muscadelle. It's the first vintage we've made it. I'm a great fan of fortifying wines. And we've actually just won a platinum award in the Decanter World Wine Awards for this wine, which is a very sought after award. So very excited.
Excellent. All right then, Murray. I think we're going to wrap it up there.
Thank you. It's been
Cheers
great.
Very much.